Chapter 13. The Claw of the Conciliator. I called, "Is he dead?" and saw Jonas nod in reply. I would have ridden away then, but he motioned for me to join him and dismounted. When we met by the Uhlan's body, he said, "We may be able to destroy those things, so they can't be flown against us again, or be used to harm anyone else. They're sated now, and I think we might handle them. We need something to put them in, something watertight of metal or glass." I had nothing of that kind and told him so. Neither have I. He knelt beside the Uhlan and turned out his pockets. Aromatic smoke from the blazing tree wreathed everything like incense, and I had the sensation of being once more in the Cathedral of the Pelerines. The litter of twigs and last summer's leaves on which the Uhlan lay might have been the straw-strewn floor, the trunks of the scattered trees, the supporting poles. "Here," Jonas said, and picked up a brass vasculum. Unscrewing the lid, he emptied it of herbs, then rolled the dead Uhlan on his back. "Where are they?" I asked. "Has the body absorbed them?" Jonas shook his head, and after a moment began, very carefully and delicately, to draw one of the dark things from the Uhlan's left nostril. Save for being absolutely opaque, it was like the finest tissue paper. I wondered at his caution. "If you tear it, won't it just become two?" "Yes, but it is sated now. Divided, it would lose energy and might be impossible to handle. A lot of people have died, by the way, because they found they could cut these creatures and chose to stand their ground doing it until they were surrounded by too many to fend off." One of the Uhlan's eyes was half open. I had seen corpses often before, but I could not escape the eerie feeling that he was in some sense watching me. The man who had killed him to save himself. To turn my mind to other things, I said, "After I cut the first one, it seemed to fly more slowly." Jonas had placed the horror he had drawn out in the vasculum and was extracting a second from the right nostril. He murmured, "The speed of any flying thing depends on its wing area. If that weren't the case, the adepts who use these creatures would tear them to scraps before they sent them forth, I suppose." "You sound as though you've encountered them before." "We docked once at a port, where they're used in ritual murders. I suppose it was inevitable that someone would bring them home, but these are the first I've seen here." He opened the brass lid and laid the second phylogen thing on the first, which stirred sluggishly. "They'll recombine in there. This is what the adepts do to get them back together. I doubt if you noticed it, but they were torn somewhat in going through the wood and healed themselves in flight." "There's one more," I said. He nodded and used his steel hand to force open the dead man's mouth. Instead of holding teeth and livid tongue and gums, it appeared to be a bottomless gulf, and for a moment my stomach churned. Jonas drew out the third creature, streaked with the dead man's saliva. "Wouldn't he have had a nostril open or his mouth if I hadn't cut the thing a second time?" "Until they worked their way into his lungs. We're lucky, actually, to have been able to get to him so quickly. Otherwise, you would have had to slice the body open to get them out." A wisp of smoke called to mind the burning cedar. "If it was heat they wanted, they prefer life's heat, though they can sometimes be distracted by a fire of living vegetable matter. It's something more than heat, I think, really. Perhaps some radiant energy characteristic of growing cells." Jonas stuffed the third creature into the vasculum and snapped it shut. "We called them notchules. because they usually came after dark, when they could not be seen, and the first warning we had was a breath of warmth. But I have no idea what the natives call them. Where is this island? He looked at me curiously. Is it far from the coast? I've always wanted to see Ouroboros, though I suppose it is dangerous. Very far, Jonas said in a flat voice. Very far indeed. Wait a moment. I waited, watching as he strode to the riverbank. He threw the vasculum hard. It had almost reached midstream when it dropped into the water. When he returned, I asked, couldn't we have used those things ourselves? It doesn't seem likely that whoever sent them is going to give up now, and we might have need of them. They would not obey us, and the world is better without them anyway, as the butcher's wife told him when she cut away his manhood. Now we'd best be going. There's somebody coming down the road. I looked where Jonas had pointed and saw two figures on foot. He had caught his destrier by the halter as it drank and was ready to climb into the saddle. Wait, I said. Or go on a chain or two and wait for me there. I was thinking of the man-ape's bleeding stump, and I seemed to see the dim votive lights of the cathedral hanging, crimson and magenta, among the trees. I reached into my boot, far down where I'd pushed it for safety, and drew out the claw. It was the first time I had seen it by full daylight. It caught the sun and flashed like a new sun itself, not blue only, but with every color from violet to cyan. I laid it on the Uhlan's forehead and for an instant tried to will him alive. Come on, Jonas called. What are you doing? I did not know how to answer him. He's not quite dead, Jonas called. Get off the road before he finds his lance. He lashed his mount. Faintly, a voice I seemed to recognize called, Master. I turned my head to look down at the grass-grown highway. Master! One of the travelers waved an arm and both began to run. It's Hathor, I said. But Jonas had gone. I looked back at the Uhlan. Both his eyes were open now, and his chest rose and fell. When I took the claw from his forehead and thrust it back into my boot top, he sat up. I shouted to Hathor and his companion to leave the road, but they did not appear to understand.
Who are you?
A friend, I said. Though the Uhlan was feeble, he tried to rise. I gave him my hand and pulled him up. For a moment, he stared at everything. Myself, the two men running toward him, the river and the trees. The destriers appeared to frighten him, even his own, which stood patiently awaiting its rider.
What is this place?
Only a stretch of the old road beside Guile. He shook his head and pressed it with his hands. Hathor came panting up, like an ill-bred dog that has run when called and now expects a petting for it. His companion, whom he had outreached by 100 strides or so, wore the gaudy clothes and greasy look of a small trader.
Master, Hathor said, you can have no idea how much trouble, how much deadly loss and difficulty we have had in overtaking you across the mountains, across the wide-blown seas and creaking plains of this fair world. What am I, your slave, but an abandoned shell, the sport of 1,000 tides cast up here in this lonely place because I cannot rest without you? How could you, the red-clawed master, know of the endless labor you've cost us?
Since I left you in Saltus afoot, and have been well mounted these past few days, I should think a good deal.
Exactly, he said. Exactly.
He looked significantly at his companion, as if my remark had confirmed something he had told him earlier, and sank down to rest upon the ground. The Ulan said slowly, I am Cornet Minius. Who are you? Heather bobbed his head as though he would have bowed.
Master is the noble Severian, servant of the Autarch, whose urine is the wine of his subjects, in the guild of the Seekers for Truth and Penitence. Heather is his humble servant. Bezek is also his humble servant. I suppose the man who rode away is his servant, too.
I gestured for him to be quiet. We are all only poor travelers, Cornet. We saw you lying here stunned and sought to help you. A moment ago we thought you dead. It must have been a near thing.
What is this place?
The Ulan asked again. Hedor answered eagerly.
The road north of Quiesco. Master, we were on a boat, sailing the wide waters of Gaiol in the blind night. We disembarked at Quiesco. On her deck and at her sails we worked our passage, Bezek and me. So slowly upriver, while the lucky ones whizzed above on their way to the House Absolute. But she made headway whether we woke or slept, and thus we caught up to you.
The House Absolute,
the Ulan muttered. I said, it's not far from here, I think. I am to be especially vigilant. I feel sure one of your comrades will be along soon. I caught my mount and clambered onto his lofty back.
Master, you're not going to leave us again. Bezek has seen you perform but twice.
I was about to answer Hedor when I caught sight of a flash of white among the trees across the highway. Something huge was moving there. At once, the thought that the sender of the nodules might have other weapons at hand filled my mind, and I dug my heels into the black's flanks. He sprang away. For half a league or more, we raced along the narrow strip of ground that separated the road from the river. When at last I saw Jonas, I galloped across to warn him and told him what I had seen. While I spoke, he seemed lost in reflection. When I had finished, he said, I know of nothing like the being you describe, but there may be many importations I know nothing of. But surely such a thing wouldn't be wandering free like a strayed cow. Instead of replying, Jonas pointed toward the ground a few strides ahead. A graveled path, hardly more than a cubit wide, wound among the trees. It was bordered with more wildflowers than I had ever seen growing naturally in company, and it was of pebbles so uniform in size and of such shining whiteness that they must surely have been carried from some secret and far-off beach. After riding a bit closer to examine it, I asked Jonas what such a path here could possibly mean. Only one thing, surely, that we are already on the grounds of the House Absolute. Quite suddenly, I recalled the spot. Yes, I said. Once Josepha and I, with some others, made up a fishing party and came here. We crossed by the twisted oak. Jonas looked at me as though I were mad, and for a moment I felt that I was. I had ridden hunting often before, but this was a charger I sat, and no hunter. My hands raised themselves like spiders to pluck out my eyes, and would have done so if the ragged man beside me had not struck them down with his own hand, which was of steel.
You are not the Chatelaine Thecla, he said. You are Severian, a journeyman of the torturers who was unfortunate enough to love her. See yourself.
He held up the steel hand so that I could see a stranger's face. Narrow, ugly, and bewildered, reflected in its work-polished palm. I remembered our tower then, the curved walls of smooth dark metal. I am Severian, I said.
That is correct. The Shadlane Thecla is dead.
Jonas.
Yes.
The Ulan is alive now. You saw him. The claw gave him life again. I lay it on his forehead, but perhaps it was just that he saw it with his dead eyes. He sat up. He breathed and spoke to me, Jonas.
He was not dead.
You saw him, I said again.
I am much older than you are. Older than you think. If there is one thing I have learned in so many voyages, it is that the dead do not rise, nor the years turn back. What has been and is gone does not come again.
Thecla's face was before me still, but it was blown by a dark wind until it fluttered and went out. I said,
if I had only used it, called on the power of the claw when we were at the banquet of the dead.
The Ulan had nearly suffocated, but was not quite dead. When I got the nodules away from him, he was able to breathe, and after a time he regained consciousness. As for your Thecla, no power in the universe could have restored her to life. They must have dug her up while you were still imprisoned in the citadel and stored her in an ice cave. Before we saw her, they had gutted her like a partridge and roasted her flesh.
He gripped my arm.
Severian, don't be a fool!
At that moment, I wanted only to perish. If the nodule had reappeared, I would have embraced it.
What did appear, far down the path, was a white shape like that I had seen nearer the river. I tore myself away from Jonas and galloped toward it.